Okay, I am also going to do something different, which is more my style. We have handouts of all my PowerPoints, and I want to make sure that, Greg, could we hand them out, or just so that everybody has them? I actually prefer to speak without directly using the PowerPoints and having them available. Thanks a lot, Jenny. And if I'm not loud enough, let me know. I know that's one of the other things that I'm just familiar with. It is a real privilege to be here, as I have stated. I think it's a wonderful honor for New Orleans to have this meeting here. This one slide is a background slide of the extent of the Deepwater Horizon oil incident, as we often refer to it as the Gulf oil spill, that occurred on April 20th in 2010 and wasn't completely under control until August. And in many ways, the largest technological disaster in U.S. history, with many ramifications, and gave us much opportunity to learn. When I talk about Tony, our work together has gone back about 15 years, I would gather, maybe even longer at this point. And Tony has had many roles in our state. He's been head of disaster, mental health. He also has been the assistant secretary, that's the top-ranking person in the Office of Mental Health that became the Office of Behavioral Health. We had a public academic liaison partnership where we trained providers throughout the state to be available for any disaster, whether human or natural. And we've worked together ever since. Tony headed up the state's efforts after Hurricane Katrina, and my wife, Joy, who couldn't be here today, was clinical director for child and adolescent services, and I was the overall clinical director of services for that period of time. It actually went on till 2009, and then our work has continued together, and with the oil spill, there were a series of grants from the state and from SAMHSA. The one from the state where we started doing surveillances in the most impacted areas, the one from SAMHSA where we continued but also worked with our colleagues from Alabama and Mississippi, and now with Florida. And it's been an honor and a privilege. Joy and I have also been called in to help and teach and manage with disasters, the earthquake in Chile and tsunami, the tsunami and nuclear disaster in Japan, some disasters in Taiwan and China, and I actually was consulting for New York when Katrina hit. We worked with them after 9/11 and again now related to Hurricane Sandy. But it has been a constant privilege. As you look through the handouts that I provided for you, the first goes over some purposive screening that we did throughout 2010 through 2012. We actually began our screenings in September of 2010, actually the first screenings to be carried out, had a number of important mental health consultants working with us to design them nationally, and Ron Kessler from Boston, others, CDC working closely with us, SAMHSA, and we did screenings both in person and by telephone in the most highly impacted areas in the state as defined geographically, the ones that were hit the most, and even within those areas, tried to do purposive sampling. I point that out because our results were higher incidence of symptoms than those reported, for example, in the SAMHSA study, the larger study, which was a broader study and included parts parishes that were impacted, but parts of parishes that weren't impacted. For example, New Orleans, where it was New Orleans East, where Dr. Winfrey is, it was highly impacted, but not the whole city. But we not only found the high incidence of mental health symptoms that you see in the handout, but we also found the persistence of them. For example, we started earlier than other screenings. We started quite shortly after the oil spill, and not only did it for 2 years, but then did a study where we were able to contact people we had contacted before in the first and second year and how they were doing. And we found persistence of symptoms, as you'll see here when we added the symptoms for depression, we had a 33% incidence. Our symptoms for PTSD were higher than those reported as well. Generalized anxiety disorder symptoms were elevated. And we would see the persistence of these symptoms. We also saw, even in our screenings, the relationship between symptoms and economic impact, direct economic impact, and physical symptoms. The medical symptoms related to the mental health symptoms. We also had respondents talking about the fact that they thought they could handle the symptoms, that they could cope, even though they were having severe symptoms. We then go on to this grant, which the four of us will be talking about, which was awarded by the federal court as part of the medical settlement arrived at by the plaintiffs, attorneys representing plaintiffs and attorneys representing British Petroleum, and we were included in it, as are our other three colleagues, as significant parts of this, to look at what we could do to provide services and services that could be helpful, services where we could study them, and services that could be sustained so that communities would really benefit. One of the things, as you look at the one of the other pictures I portrayed, the first one, is a map of where we were assigned in Louisiana. This was determined by the court, and the map will show you the actual parishes that, and you can see how widespread they were. For example, Cameron is near the Texas border. It's about a several-hour drive from New Orleans. These are mostly rural, rural-oriented parishes, highly impacted. We also found, as we began to try and make an effort, the relative absence or limited services that were available. In four of the seven parishes where we were working, there were no mental health providers living within the parishes. I'm sorry, Tony. But they have that in their handouts. That's why I prefer that they can do it at their own pace. I like to talk without referring as specifically. But in four of the seven parishes, there were no mental health providers living within the parishes. There were not only a paucity of clinical services, these were people who had been grossly underserved before the Gulf oil spill, and where what we were trying to build and work with, and we were working with primary care, working with the other projects and the Gulf Region Health Outreach Project, was to work with federally qualified health clinics, and in our cases, in some of the parishes, there were no federally qualified health clinics. We call them lookalikes, but they don't meet that definition. They're clinics. In one case, they were in two trailers that were moved 10 feet by the oil spill to the other side. They literally were moved. And one day, our clinicians were driving out there, they saw hundreds of rats crossing the street right in front of them in one of the long drives. We would have other clinics. One is just being reopened this week as we speak. It was so destroyed and had to be moved several miles to a new clinic. Noella will be having their new facility early in December. So we've been working, and what you'll see with very much of a public health approach in doing a stepped care system of care, an interprofessional system with strong community advice throughout this in our clinics. We have regular meetings. We also work with our GRHOP partners who have meetings. But we have many meetings of local respondent groups to have this be participatory type of work. We further go on, and the stepped care model is evidence-based, but we have a psychiatrist leader in the clinic, co-leaders, psychologists, now social workers. We work at the discretion of the clinics. We do it in a high-quality, evidence-based way, but we realize that the clinics are the primary care clinics, and we are the collaborators working together with them. I'm very pleased that when our work was initially one of our first publications that came out in Psychiatric Services, the major publication of the American Psychiatric Association, Dr. Druss, who's a fine public member of this organization, wrote up that this is a model that we've developed following disasters and for more isolated rural communities. We also provide the services directly on site and via telemedicine. The telemedicine we have available at the clinic, we have phone medicine. We also have actual telemedicine with people able to do evaluations at the request of the primary care clinicians or emergencies. We have this available 24/7 to the clinics we work with. We also try to make sure that we've seen all the patients whenever possible in person who we have a telemedicine call or see them afterwards. I'll go on. You can see some of the results as you go through it. We used evidence-based measures. Both we've now instituted them when the patients walk into the clinic. When they're first seen, we call them walk-in-the-door screeners. When they're first seen for their initial visit, and then as they're followed along at 1, 3, 6, 9, 12, and 18 months afterwards. What we're seeing very substantially, and the slides that you'll see are statistically accurate. They're even more dramatic when we look at the cutoffs established by the measures. We see declines in depression, declines in post-traumatic stress symptoms, declines in generalized anxiety disorder, declines in what's called the K6, which is Dr. Kessler's measure of serious mental illness. We also see, as you look at, and we see these both adults and children. Our children data are fascinating too, and this is allowing parents to bring in children who otherwise would have had to go long distances, where we provide a variety of services. Our services are therapeutic, consultation, they're preventive as well. We do things with children and families when they're in for their pediatric visits. We started a 0-5 program to specialize in young children at 6-11. But the data is fascinating with the improvement that we're seeing across the board. I want to mention two other things in my remaining 2 minutes. One is you'll see a slide that shows the relationship between physical and mental health symptoms. As the mental health symptoms decline, we did it for depression. Oh, by the way, the PCL was not specifically mentioned, even though it was in the curve, but it should have been on the side. That's the post-traumatic stress checklist. The improvement in mental health is mirrored by an improvement in physical health symptoms. And with a complicated analysis, it looks as though the improvement in mental health leads to the improvement in physical health symptoms. I wanted to mention one other thing that isn't on the slide, and it isn't in the PowerPoint. What we're seeing is a gradual increase in self-efficacy, in resilience. And this is a fascinating phenomenon. This begins, and you see this at 3, and further at 6, further at 9, further at 12, and further at 18. As the patients, clients are doing better, their sense of their ability to cope with what they're handling keeps rising. And we're very, very much struck by that as well. And our, with our clinics, we're beginning to study this. We're hearing the clinics report the same things to us, that what they're saying is they feel better able to cope with emergencies, knowing that their partners, their collaborators, are there for them at any time and available to them to participate when they need them. So I'll just wind up again saying it's been a real privilege. We're moving forward in our evaluations. We feel honored to be able to help, and also in creating services that truly will be sustainable and lead our communities with higher quality services for the long run. Thank you very much.
Hi, Dr. Winfrey. Just a couple of comments about.
You didn't mention that Dr. Winfrey also holds a. He's a member of APHA. Masters in Public Health.
Good morning. Appreciate the opportunity to come and share a few words today. I feel like the most important is if we tell a story a little bit, it helps us kind of. Get more of the picture of how important this integrated behavioral health model has been to our community. Our clinic opened up in 2008, but it was birthed out of a community needs assessment following Hurricane Katrina. Different community members who had reestablished themselves in New Orleans following the hurricane, and actually that community is one of the first ones to reestablish, really sat down and came up with a priority list of what they wanted to see in their community since they had a chance to rebuild it from the ground up. And amongst their top priorities was access to high-quality primary care services. So at the time, leaders from that community then partnered up with academic institutions like Tulane and private institutions like Children's Hospital to open up a primary care adult clinic as well as a pediatric clinic in the community to service those needs. So the clinic did open in August of 2008. And again, I just want to give you a little bit of history so you understand sort of where we've come from. And then in 2010, and again, when it first opened, the plan was always to transition ownership to the community once the clinic has been established. So in 2010, we transitioned our EHR. So we went from a basic EHR to one that's more of a certified electronic health record. That had a lot of the features that are required now for meaningful use standards. And in 2011 is when that transition occurred from private and academic ownership over to community ownership. And so since that time in 2012, we started the Practice Transformation Project. So I know many of you probably have heard of the patient-centered medical home model and this new way of delivering primary care services. Well, we went through an intensive training and coaching in that model throughout the year of 2012, incorporating care managers, care coordinators, developing our EHR. And then in 2013 is when we received our federal designation as a FQHC. At the same year, same time, we also acquired the pediatric practice as well. And so why do I start off with that? Well, one of the things that's important to realize is that the way healthcare is being delivered, primary care is being delivered now, is much different than it's been done ever. And so that posed a new challenge for a startup health center serving this community. And the community is predominantly Vietnamese. So it's a 47% Vietnamese population, about 41% African American. And we have a growing Hispanic population as well. And so as a medical director, it's always incumbent upon me to make sure that the services that we provide are both culturally and linguistically appropriate and that patients can access that care as needed. And so with that in mind, when we got ready to do our integrated behavioral health program, we wanted to make sure it was one that, again, would suit the needs of the patient. And so by doing so, it was great. we realize that depression and anxiety disorder is one of the top conditions that we're seeing in the clinic. A lot of it had to do with resettling in the community, a lot of the disasters that were taking place, as well as the stress of the economic downturn. And so we were having difficulty making progress in some of those chronic disease measures because there were some behavioral health issues that were not being addressed. So when we were able to start partnering up with our behavioral health providers, it provided an opportunity for us to now start making a little bit more headway in the management of those conditions. And what I was delighted to work with Dr. Osofsky and the LSU team is because we really expand the services that are provided. So now having access to psychologists, psychiatrists, both in the adult setting and the pediatric setting, really allowed us to provide more of a holistic type care. So I can go on and on, but I've got my little signal here saying that my time is running out. So I'll hold the rest of my comments for questions at the end.